Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of the podcast devoted to the progressive political movement here in our great state of Michigan, a place where we're trying to reverse 40 years of destructive and disastrous Republican rule, which led the state to an economic, education, social justice, and environmental decline. But Michiganders rose to the occasion and decided that enough was enough and that it was time to change course. And what changes we've experienced here so far, but there's more to be done so that the entire country and the world view us as an entertaining, embracing, educated, and enlightened state that once made us popular and powerful in this union. I'm Pat Johnston, and thanks a lot for listening. If you don't mind me taking this brief moment to tell you a little something about this podcast, in case you are listening here for the first time. Now, mostly, you'll hear me praise Democrats, particularly this crop of Michigan Democrats who have complete control of state government. It's filled with some strong progressive voices who are just tired of being stuck in the minority due to severe gerrymandering. Gerrymandering that progressives helped eliminate by putting the people back in the power of the districting process. No more could Republicans develop ways to guarantee that they'd always have power. And with Democrats back in power, we've witnessed some major policy victories, which I'll describe when I talk about the education budget recently passed and soon to be signed into law by Governor Gretchen Whitmer. However, this is a podcast devoted to progressive politics. After witnessing Republicans pass horrific policies for the last 25 years of my broadcasting career, I'm tired of right-wing ideas dominating the state. It's time to swing the pendulum back to the progressive side. But that doesn't mean that I'm always going to be on the Democrat side. Now, like I said, this current Michigan Democratic Party is filled with smart, empathetic, and common sense progressives, a kind of boldness that I wish DC Democrats would adopt and emulate from time to time. But when Democrats do wrong, I will keep it real and point it out right here on the podcast and also on leftoflansing.com. In fact, I'll give you a taste of that during this week's last call coming up in a bit. Now look, I understand politics and understand you sometimes have to accept some small victories to eventually achieve bigger victories in the future. That being said, progressives have to stand up for the values which are helping make Michigan a state that people are noticing. We're not like those red states signing bills that allow children to work in factories and stores, or that allow people to carry guns without permits, or that destroy the environment, or that offer destructive school voucher programs that inevitably fail, or that attack people who are different than them. We can't let the right wing turn back the clock and make us a detested laughingstock of a state. I mean, we're sort of getting a taste of that with these county commissions that turned to the right wing during the last elections, like that right wing takeover of the Ottawa County Board that happened last year. And I talked with progressive activist Joe Spaulding about that takeover here on the podcast. And he talked about these group of commissioners belonging to the Ottawa Impact Political Action Committee, which is like a real life right-wing email chain that your Trump-loving uncles used to send you. Since the right-wing took over the board there in Ottawa County, it declared itself above state law by declaring itself a constitutional county. It passed a resolution declaring it would not spend on programs that sexualized children, so I guess say goodbye to high school dances? I mean, I suppose, because I'm sure Ottawa Impact believes that the devil makes you dance, like Reverend Shaw in Footloose. The Ottawa Commission also demoted the county health officer and eliminated the county's diversity, equity, and inclusion office. Well, the people of Ottawa County have had enough and have filed a petition to recall one of the nutty commissioners there named Lucy Ebell. Now, Miss Ebell held a rally or a cult-like congregation in support of herself, and thanks to Distill Social, here's Ebell leading her followers with a chant of Jesus is Lord of Ottawa County. Listen.
Jesus is Lord of Ottawa County. Jesus is Lord of Ottawa County.
One more time.
Jesus is Lord of Ottawa County.
Look, that's not what we're about here in Michigan. The right wing has turned into a cult. They want to turn Ottawa County and the state back to the Stone Ages. Now, those people at the rally kind of missed the irony because they say that Jesus loves Ottawa County, but the policies and the actions they take are kind of against what Jesus taught. Visit StopOttawaImpact.com to help with the recall effort if you live in that county, and I will provide a link on this week's episode post on my site. You see, good people living in Ottawa County or in Livingston County are doing what they can to turn things around, to stop this right-wing movement. They don't want Michigan being Florida. In fact, they, along with all progressives, want Michigan being the antithesis of Florida. And it's starting to happen with the state expanding hate crimes laws to protect gay and transgender citizens. Plus, it also protects places of worship and the elderly. I mean, it's smart policy. You see, progressives have ideas on making the state a better place through policy. For the right wing, it has zero policies that either help make the state a better place or on helping people. The right wing is bereft of actual policies that help people. All it can do is stoke anger through misinformation. Trust me, I was in right-wing radio for 25 years. I know it. For example, let's take the expansion of the hate crimes law here in Michigan. So you see, the House bill passed by a 59-50 vote, garnering even a few Republican votes. Yet, that did not stop the right-wing intelligentsia from lying to its followers that the bill also makes it a felony to use a person's incorrect pronoun. Fox News plastered the following headline on its website last week, reading, "Michigan House passes bill that could make using wrong pronouns a felony up to $10,000. Under new bill, intimidating individuals in regards to their gender identity can result in prison time or a $10,000 fine." Other right-wing media outlets carried similar lies about the bill, and it went viral. But as Chad Livingood from the Detroit News reported, the 1988 Michigan hate crimes law already makes it illegal to intimidate someone based on an actual or perceived characteristic, such as race or color, religion, sex, or national origin. This bill would add protections for sexual orientation, gender identity, age, and physical or mental disability. And Livingood continues to say, under the legislation, intimidation is defined as a willful course of conduct involving repeated or continuing harassment of another individual that would cause a reasonable individual to feel terrorized, frightened, or threatened, and that actually causes the victim to feel terrorized, frightened, or threatened. And the bill's definition of intimidation does not include constitutionally protected activity or conduct that serves a legitimate purpose. So in other words, you still have a First Right Amendment to be an absolute jerk if you want to be, and you can still use incorrect pronouns. All this bill is doing is expanding who falls victims to hate crimes. What's wrong with that? How can anyone oppose or lose sleep over finding ways to help people, to help protect people? I don't get it. Come on, guys. The right wing here has no policy ideas. They're only about creating a world or a fantasy that never existed. On the flip side, thanks to tough progressive voices, Democrats use their majority to do things to help people and families. Not only that, they pass policies that are common sense policies, like the education budget, which is headed to the governor's desk. Progressives understand that in order to turn the state around and to make it more attractive for young families and businesses, you have to have a smart and bold education policy. The $24.3 billion state school budget is filled with priorities that should have been in place long ago, and they're long overdue. For instance, public schools will see an increase of 5% in per pupil funding, $10 million extra dollars for literacy coaches, $140 million in grants to help schools with their early literacy programs. The bill contains nearly $1 billion to help with disadvantaged students or at-risk students. It will also try to retain teachers by offering fellowships to help offset the cost of college. You see, progressives believe in keeping and developing good teachers for the future so that they can help develop our students to become the best and the brightest. I know, revolutionary thinking. Meanwhile, the right wing demonizes teachers for expanding kids' minds through books, while at the same time, they also tell teachers, you know what though? We don't trust you to actually teach our kids, but we trust you to carry guns in schools. The school budget also makes Michigan just the 7th state in the union to offer universal free breakfast and lunch to all public school students. I mean, it still makes me laugh when I read right wingers complain about feeding children. That's all this is feeding children. But that's the thought process right now of that side. The bill also provides extra grant money to help school districts ditch those dirty old diesel buses of the past by contracting for clean energy buses and other vehicles. Hey, you know what? It's not only good for the environment, it's good for the kids' health as well. I know, again, revolutionary thinking. Now, did progressive Democrats get everything they want in that bill? No. But did they move the needle with that bill Absolutely. That's the kind of change people want in Michigan. It's time to move forward and invest in our people, our kids, and our entire infrastructure, our environment, and our overall physical and mental health throughout the state. You want to bring people back here? You want to attract people to visit and stay here in Michigan? Well, that's how you do it. You propose popular policies that are proven to work and set us on a course for the future, not the past. Improving people's lives is remarkably good politics. I know, I'll be darned. Like the Democrats' clean and affordable energy and climate bill. It's got a major goal of making the state carbon energy free by 2035. Oh, I know the corporate right wing and DTE Energy with its $10 million a year CEO will try to scare everyone that such a goal is impossible and will lead to higher prices. But you know what? With the state already paying the 12th highest energy rate in the country, and with that energy not being the most reliable, it's no wonder that a majority of Michiganders are ready to make some bold environmental and economic changes. A recent poll from Evergreen Action and Data for Progress, joined by the Michigan League of Conservation Voters, Michigan United, and Solidarity, shows that 67% of Michiganders support these greener and affordable energy ideas that Democrats are proposing. 65% of voters support Michigan transitioning to a 100% clean energy electricity grid by 2035, and some 65% of voters, including strong majorities of Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, want the legislature to do more to hold utility companies accountable for those blackouts. So it appears that many are ready to foster some real environmental and energy reform right here in the state. And joining me to talk more about this will be Charlotte Jameson from the Michigan Environmental Council. You are listening to LOL,
a podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? Leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
Hey, thank you, Jessica, for being the podcast voice, and I'll be giving you more work to do here in the near future, my friend, so stand by for that one. But again, thanks, Jess, for helping make the pod sound that much better. And please remember to subscribe to Left of Lansing and give it a 5-star review, or if you have to, give it a 4-star review if you must. It's just a good way to show your support for the podcast, and hey, it makes me feel better too. I'd like to continue to focus on the environment here for another week, because with Democrats in control of state government, the environment is receiving much needed and long overdue attention. I spoke with Darrell Slaughter from the Natural Resources Defense Council last week to cover the new energy and climate package of bills that Democrats introduced recently. And this week, I'd like to talk more about those bills and other pressing environmental issues that we must tackle here in the state. And joining me to do just that is Charlotte Jameson, Chief Policy Officer of the Michigan Environmental Council. Charlotte, thank you so much for being on Left of Lansing this week.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
All right, if you don't mind, before we talk about the new clean energy package, I was wondering if we could touch a little bit on the state school budget, because I first mentioned this just before you joined in here on how there are many positive aspects in that budget, including more spending for cleaner school transportation. Democrats agreed to provide about $125 million in grant money helping school districts contract for electric school buses and other vehicles. Now, will this alone solve our climate crisis? No, but I look at it this way, that every effort helps, right? Because replacing those loud diesel buses with zero emission school buses, to me, just seems like smart policy.
Yeah, it really is no brainer. If you think about a school bus and the emissions, they're really impacting those most vulnerable amongst us, our children. They're the ones who are still developing. And so any air pollution they're breathing in really has the biggest impact on them. And a lot of them are right at that height where they're the same level as the tailpipe. And so those emissions are going right into their body. So the more we can transition to truly zero emission electric buses, the less air pollution those kids are breathing in. So it's really a win-win for climate and for our public health as well.
Charlotte, is this something that was being sought by school districts, or since now this funding is available, you're hearing more and more get on board?
Yeah, school districts across Michigan were really, I think, turned on to this idea because there was significant federal funding for electric school buses. And in a recent round of applications for that from the EPA, Michigan had one of the highest number of school districts apply for federal funding. Unfortunately, that federal funding is limited. And so some of those school districts did not get their applications approved, but are still very much interested in transitioning to electric school buses. So this state funding is going to be really helpful in order to fill that kind of gap between the school districts that want to make this transition and the available funding that's out there. And the real issue, you know, when we have electric school buses is less schools' interest and more just that the upfront cost is that much more than a diesel bus. And so school districts really do need financial help to be able to make these purchases.
You know, that's a great point that you just said there too, because I think a lot of people sometimes they see the prices for an electric vehicle or especially like an electric school bus and think that's expensive. But in the long run, when it comes to maintenance costs and everything else, like a school district would end up saving money.
Exactly. There's no oil, you know, no more oil changes. There's just a lot less moving parts. There's a lot less maintenance. And so over the long run, there's a lot of savings that can be had from avoided maintenance costs. But there still is, especially with buses, since they're so big and the batteries that are required are really large, there's still a very significant kind of cost differential between a diesel bus and an electric school bus. So, you know, once we sort of bring that cost differential down by helping school districts make that upfront purchase, they really will save a lot of money in the long run on deferred maintenance or avoided maintenance.
I read somewhere, maybe you can expand a little bit on this, that did I see the state is going to do like a study on the infrastructure of schools across the state and that there are ways that we could make them more energy efficient, that those schools will be able to get the funding to do such a thing?
Yeah. So in fact, in this last state budget, there was $20 million for a statewide study of energy efficiency potential in our school buildings. So that's really the first step is we've got to get some energy efficiency experts to go into schools and buildings and really take a look at them and figure out what are the most cost-efficient ways to pursue energy efficiency and to reduce energy waste. And so that's what the state budget is going to fund. And it's really exciting because once we have that information in hand, then school districts can, you know, move forward with those projects. And it's just another great way to see not only significant cost savings because we're reducing energy use, but also significant reduction in greenhouse gas emissions because that's that much less energy that we're having to produce.
It just seems like it would be a good idea not just to help save energy when it comes to schools, but then that would also help keep the students themselves healthier.
Exactly. Yeah. Two things we want to have happen. So
that's
yeah,
right.
It was really a great step in the budget that was funded. So we're excited about it.
If you don't mind, I'd like to stick with electric vehicles. Do you believe they are a good start on creating a greener and cleaner economy?
I really do. Transportation emissions are second in terms of the largest amount of greenhouse gas emissions emitting sector. They're second only to power generation. And we're quickly moving to a place where transportation emissions are going to overtake power sector emissions here in Michigan. And so we're not going to solve climate change unless we reduce and eliminate emissions from the transportation sector. And the only way to do that is to transition to zero emitting vehicles, electric vehicles, and to give people more options to avoid cars altogether, right? So we need walkable and bikeable communities. We need much more public transit. And if we invest in those things, then we really will be able to zero out not only harmful greenhouse gas emissions and tackle climate change, but also really toxic air pollution like smog and particulate emissions and these other things that are just really bad for our health.
You brought up public transportation. I saw a tweet by Michigan Advanced business writer Rick Haglin over the weekend, and he said that there's no direct passenger train service between the state's two largest metro areas, that being Grand Rapids to Detroit, yet several million dollars in federal funds have been awarded to planning for Ann Arbor to Traverse City rail passenger service. Now, I'm not going to badmouth that plan because I don't care if when it comes to rail, I'm all for it no matter where it goes. But I get his point. And I guess overall, if we are going to become a state for tomorrow, we have to do more when it comes to public transportation, including rail, right?
Yeah, 100%. We should have much more rail and much more accessibility across the state by rail from Detroit to Grand Rapids, from Ann Arbor to Lansing, from Detroit to Lansing, from Southeast Michigan up to the UP. I mean, we should be able to get around the state relatively easily by rail, no matter where you live. And so, yeah, I agree with his point that the Detroit to Grand Rapids line is really, really important. And it is, to my mind, a real failure to the residents of Michigan that we don't have that line in place and that it's not easier to get between those two cities if you don't have a car. But I also would not necessarily begrudge the folks who have been advocating for a long time for the Ann Arbor Traverse City line. I don't think we should be pitting these projects against each other. I think we should be looking to fund all of them and to get all of them off the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've been arguing, and I know that you are probably in agreement, that building a more robust public transportation system is a good way to start attracting people, especially younger people, here to the state. It just makes common sense.
Yeah, we hear time and again that any sort of talent attraction effort, trying to get younger people to move to Michigan, depends upon having walkable communities, on having robust public transit options. You know, people want to move to vibrant areas, and it's hard to do that when, you know, we don't have that infrastructure in place. So I think we are really doing ourselves a disservice as a state in our effort to grow our population and to attract people to come here if we're not also investing heavily in all modes of transit and transportation, and also in housing and other sorts of infrastructure that makes our communities places that people really want to call home.
You know, I've seen where other areas around the country that they are busy in trying to provide a more cleaner public transit alternatives in their communities, like, I think, what, Austin, Texas? I think they approved billions of dollars to expand bus and rail lines within the city there, and other cities are doing the same. You sort of brought it up earlier, and I just want to ask it before it leaves my mind. Is it a challenge, especially in Michigan, because we've invested so much in the auto industry and that we are a manufacturing state for decades? Is that a challenge to get that kind of mindset here in the state that we have to start doing something different?
Yeah. 100%. We continue to pride ourselves on being sort of the auto capital of the world, which I argue we can still do and also have robust public transit and walkable communities. I just think that so much of the conversation over the last 20, 30, 40 years has been, how are we going to continue to invest and maintain our road system? And not often enough are we asking ourselves, how are we going to invest in a system of transportation that moves people from point A to point B in a way that they want to be moved, as opposed to the conversation of how are we going to get a car from point A to point B? Yeah, I really think we need to think differently as a state about our whole transportation system and move away from some of the failed policies of the past that got us into this place where we are losing population and where it is hard to attract people to come and live in Michigan.
Yeah, absolutely. Charlotte Jamieson of the Michigan Environmental Council is on the podcast here this week. Okay, so let's talk about the clean energy and climate package the Democrats have introduced last week. I called it, I mean, I described it as bold. That's how it reads to me, especially considering how we've always been viewed, like I said, as a manufacturing state, but trying to set a goal of being carbon free by 2035, and that's just 12 years from now. I don't view that to be as radical as maybe some out there may think after dealing with the Canadian wildfire smoke of last week, the harsh flooding events that many across the state have been dealing with here for the last few years, the power outages from last winter's ice storms, and the damage to our farming community. Again, I look at this package of bills, and it doesn't seem to me, Charlotte, to be all that radical. It just seems long overdue.
Exactly. Climate change is here already. We're already feeling the negative impacts, as you said. And this is what our modeling and what science tells us we have to do. This is the timeline we need to move on. And so what the Democrats have put forward in the legislature, I wouldn't necessarily cast as extreme or way out there. This is, in fact, informed by very credible science in terms of the pace we need to move at. I think also a lot of times it's easy to kind of frame a policy debate around, well, what are other states doing? And let's look at what other states have done. You know, I think that's the wrong way to look at it. To me, Michigan has always been an innovator, and I don't think we should necessarily think that we're moving too quickly just because other states are looking at 2040 or 2045 or some of these other longer timelines.
I know there is a lot in this package of bills, but I was wondering maybe if somebody walked up to you on the street and said, hey, can you give me two or three reasons why you are supportive of this and why you think it would benefit Michigan, what would those three things be?
Yeah, it's about transitioning to clean, affordable energy. I like to think of this not only as a climate package, but an affordable energy package. And the truth is that we're pushing forward on zero emission forms of energy like wind and solar, energy efficiency, these things that make sense from a climate perspective. This is what we need to pursue. But the added benefit is that they're the cheapest forms of energy generation right now. And so by transitioning fully to clean energy, we're going to create a more affordable energy system. And so that's why I think by and large, most people on the street in Michigan support moving aggressively to combat climate change. And they also want affordable energy. And so, you know, this package really delivers on both of those goals.
DTE, Consumers Energy, it doesn't appear that those companies have directly opposed this legislation yet. Do you expect some pushback from them?
Yes. We definitely do. You know, I've not heard either directly from them in terms of their specific positioning on the legislation. So I won't speak for them, but I know from, you know, negotiations with them in the past that they're going to be opposed to any requirements, you know, anything that requires them to do something they tend to not like. They also have expressed some hesitancy around the timeline and around the level of renewable and clean energy that we're asking them to pursue. So I think they will push back heavily on this legislation. But again, we feel pretty comfortable that this is the place to start, both from a climate perspective and from a perspective of trying to save people money.
You know, I'm not exactly sure what the argument will be from DTE or consumers when it comes to maybe a bill like this. I mean, yeah, I expect them to say, prices will rise. This will lead to higher prices. Even though Michigan already pays the 12th highest rates, energy rates in the country, that's according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. So I'm not sure exactly how that argument is going to sail with Michiganders.
Exactly. I mean, we have the highest rates, I think, in the Midwest and the worst reliability. So we're paying the most for the worst service. So, you know, I think what we've been doing to date is not working. And the utility is saying we need more of the same in order to keep energy affordable. You know, it's pretty laughable from my perspective. I think we need to transition to clean, affordable energy. And that's the way we're going to not only try to keep some of our bills down, but also help improve reliability and, again, tackle climate.
Charlotte Jamieson of the Michigan Environmental Council is on with me here this week. While I have you here, I recently commented on and I praised the bill that repeals the No Stricter Than Federal Law, which state Democrats recently passed, and it's on its way to Governor Whitmer's desk. That bill means that Michigan can now go back to passing environmental laws that are stronger than federal laws or standards. I was wondering if you could explain to some people out there how this would help Michiganders, and what do you say to opponents who argue that repealing this will hurt future business investments?
You got to think about when the federal government comes up with rules or regulations, they really are looking at the nation as a whole. They're trying to set uniform standards for every single state. And so it's a no-brainer when you look at it that way to understand that states are different and that we're going to need the ability and the flexibility to design our own rules and regulations here in Michigan. And so that's what the repeal of No Stricter Than Federal is going to give us the ability once more to do, to put in place protections that make sense for our state. I also like the point too that the business community is always trying to sort of force this wedge between environmental issues and economic issues. And to me, it's a false dichotomy. You know, what's good for our environment is good for our people. And what's good for our people, they're the ones who are our workers. They're the ones who are driving our economy. And so we're going to have a better business climate, a better climate for workers, if we're also taking care of our drinking water and our air and all these things that impact our health and well-being.
You're sort of echoing something that Democratic State Senator Stephanie Chang told me when she was on here recently, when she said passing a bill like this, you know, does make sense for the business community because keeping customers alive and healthy seems like a good strategy for businesses.
Exactly. Yeah. Who's gonna make the widget if your workers are sick at home from asthma or you know, whatever the thing is. So yeah, I love that point.
one last question here. Aggregate mining. There's been some contention here within the Democratic Party caucus and for some who are apparently in support of legislation that would eliminate local control over permitting and oversight of gravel mines. Now, this means that local communities, from this is how I read it, would no longer have say over mining in their communities, especially residents would not be able to talk about how the air and water conditions are due to these mines. Was this on the Michigan Environmental Council's radar that this would be an issue with Democrats in control of Lansing, an issue that's being pushed by the sand and gravel industry?
Yeah, unfortunately, this is an issue we knew was going to come back. It continues to be something that the gravel industry is pushing heavily, and frankly, that some labor unions want to see move forward because to them, they see opportunities for jobs in that space. Yeah. So we knew it was going to come back up. But, you know, we also have a lot of supporters in the legislature now who really value environmental protection and want to see or are putting their foot down to say anything we do around gravel or sand mining really needs to have robust environmental and community protections. And the bill that's in front of the legislature right now just really falls short of both of those.
Okay. Well, we'll keep following that. Charlotte, if anybody would like to learn more about the Michigan Environmental Council, how could they do so?
Yeah. Come to our website, MichiganEnvironmentalCouncil.org. Check out our contact information on there. Feel free to email any of us and reach out.
All right. Charlotte Jamieson, Chief Policy Officer of the Michigan Environmental Council. Thank you so much for being on this week. And I hope that we can talk again soon.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. If the podcast isn't enough and you are in need of more Pat, follow him on Twitter and like him on Facebook. Also, don't forget, you can read more of his thoughts and hear an archive of past episodes on leftoflansing.com.
We'll keep track of these clean and affordable energy and climate bills once the legislature returns from the summer break. And next week, I'll speak with Democratic State Representative Betsy Coffey of Traverse City. She's a sponsor of one of the initiatives in that bill package. We'll talk about that, plus so much more. I've been looking forward to speaking with Representative Coffey for such a long time, and that'll happen next week. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. Just before the July 4th holiday, Governor Whitmer announced he will serve on the state commission that will study ways to reverse Michigan's population drain. Now, Michigan ranks 49th in population growth, which is just so shocking because you'd think the Republican efforts of tax cuts for their rich donor base would have been the elixir. That's what I was told, and that's exactly what Rick Snyder and John Engler believed. Well, it didn't. And here's an even scarier stat. According to a Glengariff Group poll, only 55% of Michiganders between the ages of 18 to 29 say they see themselves still in Michigan in 10 years. Huh. Now, for those of us on the progressive side and for the state Democratic Party, those are alarming numbers considering how key a role that 18 to 29 age group played in the 2022 midterms. That voting bloc not only helped secure abortion rights in the state constitution and helped expand voting rights for the future, but those younger voters helped usher in full Democratic Party control in Lansing. So, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I think finding a way to keep those Michiganders here should be a top concern. Also, keeping them here should be a top concern for everyone in the state if we are going to continue to thrive. And not only that, but if we're going to continue to have clout in Congress. Remember, Michigan keeps losing seats every 10 years. But while finding ways to generate population growth back to our state is long overdue, I'm not exactly sure we're going about it the right way. Ron French from The Bridge magazine says the growing Michigan Council is led by 76-year-old John Rakolta, a 76-year-old construction company chairman who served as an ambassador to the United Arab Emirates under President Donald Trump, and Shirley Stancato, who's either 73 or 74 years of age and is the longest-serving president and CEO of New Detroit, who now serves on the Board of Governors for Wayne State University. Now, I'm not saying Rakolta and Stancato are not well-respected people, although anyone who worked under Donald Trump should probably never get such an austere position. Anyway, the whole purpose of this council is to attract younger talent. How a 76 and a 74-year-old are going to be able to do that? Not sure. In fact, French says that 15 of the 16 commission members named last week are over the age of 40. Just one, Olive Howie of White Cloud in rural West Michigan, Newaygo County, is under 30. Just one. That seems like a problem. Perhaps having a council on keeping younger people in the state should, I don't know, have more young people on it. Instead, Governor Whitmer appointed Bill Parfit, who is either 76 or 77 of Hickory Corners. He's the chair and CEO of the Northwood Group. He's also held numerous public company positions, including chairman of the Upjohn Company, which is now a part of Pfizer, and Stryker. Now, interestingly, Bill Parfit has joined with former Republican Governor Rick Snyder on restoring a Republican majority in the State House because Rick Snyder's throwing a hissy fit that the Democrats are erasing his 8-year tenure one bill at a time. Poor Rick. So, knowing that, why in the world is Governor Whitmer asking Bill Parfit to join her commission on growing Michigan's population? I mean, it's people like Parfit and the policies that he pushed who eventually ended up pushing people out of the state. It's his fault. How is a billionaire heir determined to give the gavel back to Republicans going to help the cause in bringing young people back to the state? I mean, Bill Parfit would have allowed abortion to be erased from the books. He would have fought against expanding the earned income tax credit. He definitely would have been against repealing Right to Work for Less, and he would have at least tacitly supported the fascist Moms for Liberty group just as long as he and his buddies received lavish tax breaks in return. You really believe someone like Bill Parfit has young people's interest in the front of his mind? You know better. Unfortunately, Governor Whitmer apparently doesn't.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Thanks so much again to Charlotte Jameson from the Michigan Environmental Council. And when it comes to that controversial aggregate mining issue that she and I talked about, I will not only keep an eye on it, but I'll try to have another guest on to discuss it in the future because it's a bad bill and we need to make others aware of it and to stop it. Next week, I'll speak with Democratic State Representative Betsy Coffia of Traverse City. In the meantime, check out leftoflansing.com for additional thoughts and musings by yours truly. Don't forget that I'm on Twitter, the Gram, and Facebook. As we've seen here, during the last few weeks, the extreme right-wing majority of the U.S. Supreme Court is taking rights away one step at a time. That's why we must remain vigilant and lead the progressive charge to make Michigan a place that Americans can point to and say, yes, yes, that's the place I want to live, and yes, that's the state that's getting it right. Let's have people say yes to Michigan. That's never been used, right? No? Oh, it has been used, though. Anyway, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.